Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning. How are we doing this morning? So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLIW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at wliw.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. Each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com and distributed on my podcast via Audio Boom and iTunes. Well, it's my favorite golf week of the year, the Masters, for many, many reasons. And when I try to figure it out why I just love it here so much. Well, first of all, the beauty of the golf course and the pristine condition it is in all the time. The perfection that they strive for in running this tournament year in and year out, the precision. And there's an interesting mix of tradition combined with them, Augusta National, being on the cutting edge of technology and innovation. So there's this wonderful mix on a backdrop that is both stunning and challenging and full of history and magical performances through the years. This morning, you'll hear my conversation with two longtime friends and colleagues in the radio business, Austin Rhodes and John Patrick. Now, Austin Rhodes, he hosts the Austin Rhodes Show here on WGAC 580 in Augusta. He's been doing that for 31 years and has been coming to the Masters for 54 years. He grew up right across the street of Augusta National, so he knows this area very, very well. John Patrick, he is a talk show host on WGAC, host of the Augusta Golf Show. They are both here every year at Augusta National, and in fact, I've been staying with Austin and his family for the past 24 years, so they are really my Augusta family. So this morning, you will hear my conversation with those Austin Rhodes and John Patrick. You'll also hear a conversation I recently had with Hall of Fame caddy Joe LaCava. And we talk about his Hall of Fame career. He's caddied for so many different players, but most known for caddying for Freddie Couples for 20 years. And he was on the bag with Freddie when Freddie won the 1992 Masters. And he also caddied for Tiger Woods for 12 years, including Tiger's magical comeback win back in 2019. I'm also delighted to tell you about my new book, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. It's just out as of April 2nd, and it's very uplifting and inspirational. That was my intent from the beginning. I basically picked 12 legends in golf, 6 men and 6 women. There are actually 5 Masters champions in the book: Jack Nicklaus, Ben Crenshaw, Tom Watson, Bernard Langer, Gary Player, and Annika Sorenstam, who is a recent member of Augusta National. I saw her out here this week wearing her green jacket. She is one of the 6 female legends in the book, and they all talk about their iconic golf careers and what they bring from their golf careers to day-to-day life. So it's really a lot about life wisdom and what they've learned through the years, and they share that wisdom. And they're all so gracious with their time, the time they gave me in the interviews. All the interviews are brand new interviews done within the last year or so. And they all really were excited about being included in the book and having the opportunity to really share their wisdom. For instance, Gary Player, 88 years young, talks about, you know, pursuing one's passion. And who better than Gary Player to talk about that? He continually plays golf. He works out every day. He's very conscientious about his diet and eating well. And I could listen to Gary Player just reminisce and talk for hours. He has so much wisdom, and he loves to share it with everybody, young and old. Jack Nicklaus, in the book, his chapter is titled Sportsmanship and Maintaining Integrity and Putting Family First. And Jack Nicklaus, he will tell you that, yes, he's had a great life making a bunch of 4-foot putts for major championship titles, but ahead of chasing trophies, what's most important to him is his family. He has 5 children and 24 grandchildren and a couple great-grandchildren as well. And he talks a lot about his lovely wife, Barbara Nicholas, and all the charity work they do. And really, you know, many, he tells some really great stories about his career as well, and about his Masters wins and his Ryder Cup play. But, you know, when he was in the prime of his career, there were many times when on a Saturday evening, he would leave a tournament to go and attend his son's football or baseball game, and then fly back to the tournament on Sunday morning and finish the final round, and oftentimes he won those tournaments. So Jack always prioritized his family. Annika Sorenstam. Annika talks about patience and the fact that there are no shortcuts to success. She tells a great story about when she was a teenager and on the range practicing in Sweden. It started to pour, it started to rain very, very hard, and she called her father up to ask him to come pick her up. And as they were leaving in the car, they looked at the driving range and they saw a bunch of junior players still out there on the range just working hard and trying to improve their game despite getting pelted by raindrops. And her father looked over to her and said, "Annika, there are no shortcuts to success. Look at all those junior players out there really grinding." And she said, you know, those words to her were very uncomfortable at the time. And it made her really think about working and practicing and in all kinds of conditions, and the truth to those words, that there are no shortcuts to success. So there is so much wisdom in the book, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. You can order it on Amazon.com. You can order it via BarnesandNoble.com as well. And really, the universal themes are very positive and very uplifting. So if you're not a diehard golfer, I think you'll still enjoy this book, because you'll learn a lot about these incredible legends in the book, and you'll be inspired by their wisdom and their stories. So I hope you enjoy this special edition of Sports Interview from the Masters. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to two longtime colleagues in radio and very good friends of mine. We are at Augusta National here in the Media Center for another edition of The Masters. And it's always a joy to reconnect with John Patrick, who's been covering The Masters for 40 years, and Austin Rhodes, my host with the most. I stay with Austin and his family. I've stayed with them every year for, gosh, my 26 years covering the Masters. Austin's been covering the Masters for 34 years. Guys, welcome to Sports Interview.
Thank you. It sounds like she got us out of the home, doesn't it?
I'm beginning to think that she did. Yeah, of course, she met me when I was 4. I don't know about you, but yes.
And what do we say? I know more about you. I've been, you know, I know your son. I remember when your son was a newborn. And, of course, Dear Atticus, 20-year-old Dear Atticus the cat, who we all adored. And we lost him this year. But we'll stay positive here, Austin, because he was such a good boy. Anyway, so it's so great to see you guys. I want to hear first off how this incredible place, Augusta National, has changed in your eyes through the years. And you were born and raised here in Augusta, Austin Road, so you've been here many, many times, beyond the 40.
Yeah. Much like the country has changed, the founding fathers versus what we have now, and that's, I need to be maybe a little more reverent and respectful of the current leadership here, but that's how different it is. These gentlemen and ladies that are now in charge of Augusta National are of a far different generation than Clifford Roberts and Jock Stevens, all those folks that through the years just really established this place as the gold standard, the platinum standard of sporting events. Having said that, John Patrick can attest to this. You watched it at home, detached, and it was almost like watching a church service. I still think that continues now on television coverage, but if you have worked this event like he and I have, you have seen such, not just night and day, but just, huge, metaphorically seismic differences. I mean, it's the atomic bomb. It's really a fascinating study in how far they've come. We're sitting in a state-of-the-art media facility unrivaled in sports, and it's open 1 week a year. That's insane. But it's Augusta National.
And I'm trying to remember, is this the 10th year this beautiful facility has been open? Or
we got into this in 2016, so this is 8 years.
Okay, 8 years. And back then it was a $60 million facility. I remember that number, but if they were to build it today, it probably would be double that, right? But I want more specifics from you in a second, Austin. But John, boy, 40 Masters, that's, and you're only 18.
I know, 48, who knew? You know, we were having a discussion yesterday about the fact, and I don't want this to sound horrible, but we were having a discussion that when we started coming here, it was well-run and charming, and now it's well-run. Just a lot of that charm is gone. Someone said it felt like what it was, which was you were inserting yourself for 1 week out of the year on a private golf club. And that doesn't really feel that way now. It feels like this is the reason this place exists, not the membership for the other months of the year. So in that way, it's different. And to Austin's point, you know, that's just a sign of the times. That's the sign of keeping up. That's the sign of being ahead of the curve, where a lot of the other governing bodies look to what this place is able to do, and they take their ideas from them. I know that the USGA will have, at this year's U.S. Open in Pinehurst, a portable, temporary, Berkman's-like feature for the high-end customer. As Austin alluded to the fact, there's a Berkman's place here. That's the hospitality for the high-end customer, but it's open 1 week out of the year. And it's a structure that doesn't go away.
I understand what you're saying about the charm, but still, to this day, it does still have charm when you compare it to all the other sporting events, obviously, right? And how much other events have grown. But here we're in the same place year after year. They have sold more tickets. The merchandising area has gotten huge. We were there today. Augusta National Women's Amateur Day here, the Saturday before Masters Week even starts, right? And the line was wrapped so far around the building, it was unbelievable. It was never like that, right? And now it just seems like all that merchandise is a key focus for a lot of the people that come here on Saturday. So yes, there's different reasons, I would say, why maybe it doesn't have the charm that it used to. But compared to other sporting events, this still has charm, like unlike any other.
Yeah, no, I get that. But you were asking about years past, yeah. And when we parked on the crush and run, and you just kind of walked up to this makeshift gate, and you didn't have to your point, you didn't have that sort of merchandising tent. You had a merchandising tent, not the merchandise shop that you have today. And I'm not saying it's worse. I'm just saying it's different.
Yeah.
It's different.
And give me some specific things in your mind, Austin, that have really changed dramatically since you started coming here.
Well, in 1968, my parents bought their first house. I was 3 years old, and they bought it on Oakdale Road in National Hills Subdivision, which is right across the street from the National. The shopping center that was built in 1966 was, within the last 10 years, bought by Augusta National, and now the new flag and map high-end hospitality suite, or not suite, excuse me, hospitality building, is the same building that my mother bought my first Easter suit from. It was a J.B. White's department store back in 66 through, you know, until it closed down about 20 years ago.
So another Berkman's place, but across the street.
Yes, flag and map, which is, again, right across the street. And it now gives you two options, Berkman's Place and Flag and Map. Now, Flag and Map is the first real premium venture of the Augusta National that does not physically belong on the property. So that's kind of interesting, and that's maybe the sign of things to come. But the fact that the Augusta National has now taken up from where they once sat to now triple that in acreage from here all the way to Interstate 20, and just the other side of them to a residential neighborhood really ought to tell you something. I mean, the footprint of this club has dramatically increased in the last 25 years.
But some things have stayed the same, right? The sandwiches are still very relatively inexpensive, $1.50. Yeah. And the beer went up, I heard, a little bit to maybe $6 a cup. But you still have very reasonable concession.
More than reasonable concessions. To your point, going to the other major championships, you know, sandwiches are $12, $16. The egg salad is still $1.50. I think the pimento cheese is still $1.50. Yeah, the ham and cheese on rye might be $3, maybe. But I was on the course earlier today with somebody who comes here relatively often and is still marveling at the fact that she got, you know, her sandwich, her drink, her chips, and her moon pie, and they rang it up and it was $6.25. Where else does that happen?
And the sandwiches are wrapped in green wrappers so that if by chance the wrappers fly away, they kind of blend in with the grass and everything else. Don't you think that's a nice touch, Austin?
It's always been a nice touch, and it's one of the, you know, the key factors of the Augusta National thinks of everything. On a note on the food, just reading an article from the Augusta Chronicle today, the egg salad sandwich has gone up 25 cents in 24 years. 25 cents in 24 years, nowhere else. And they're the general business model for this, for the food, I was always told, is they don't intend to lose a dime. They don't intend to make a dime. It's break even. So they are literally serving you the food at cost because they realize you're not here for the food. The food is a convenience while you're here. You're here for the tournament. And nowhere else does anyone in the world of sports take that into consideration. They, you know, completely kill you on the concessions. And here, everything is reasonable. And I'll tell you something else, too, and John can echo this. The souvenirs, while there are high-end souvenirs that you can purchase, the vast majority of people can come here and shop and spend far less money than they would at just spring shopping for the kids because everything here is made with quality, but it's also made not to bilk not to squeeze the last dime out of the visitors. It's a great and tremendous it's a philosophy, but it's refreshing more than anything else. I mean, how amazing is it that the NFL hadn't gotten that message or Major League Baseball?
Yeah. And you would know, as Austin is a diehard Steelers fan, and
he's
in Pittsburgh more than I am, and my family is originally from Pittsburgh.
Let me just make a point. Roger Goodell is a member of Augusta National, and Roger Goodell has been watching and taking notes since he first stepped foot on these premises about how certain things are handled. And while I don't think you're ever going to get the price breaks that you get here at the Augusta National in the NFL, I think a bottom line dedication to quality and a quality experience is something that he has taken away. And if you've been to an NFL facility lately, it's a whole lot more like Augusta National than it ever was before. And I think there's the connection there.
Interesting. Roger, I saw Roger here last year. Tell me about some of the other NFL greats who have become members.
I have broken several major stories in my life, but I don't think any of them got the pizzazz of the three that I broke here. One was breaking Peyton Manning's membership at Augusta National. The other two were Lynn Swann and John Stallworth's membership at Augusta National. And the guys in Pittsburgh, I never have to buy a beer there because the press guys owe me. As you well know, the membership list is not published and they don't make announcements. So when you see one of your childhood heroes in a green jacket, it's a big moment. And John has certainly had his share of seeing faces that he recognizes in a green jacket that he didn't know they owned. And that's happened to me several times. And again, especially with John Stallworth, where I literally saw him 2 years ago here as a guest of Lynn Swann in street clothes. And the very next year, I see him in the green jacket and I say, Mr. Stallworth, we have made an improvement in our wardrobe. And he just laughed and he said, well, you know, we're not supposed to talk about such things. I said, no, absolutely not, sir. So big thrill.
Well, we can talk about it, and it was so great today walking around to see Annika Sorenstam wearing a green jacket, John Patrick.
Well, you know, I'll dovetail on his story, and this is a conflict that I run into, and I don't know how often you run into this. I knew Annika was a member about a month before everybody else did, and I texted them and congratulated them and was, as Austin says about the rules, by the way, there are no rules here. Don't break them. But as Austin said about the rules, please don't do it. And, you know, now I'm conflicted with knowing her and this. And I chose not to. And I chose not to, Ann, because, you know, this, if I'd have been an out-of-town reporter, I might have done that. But I live here, and I deal with these folks all the time. And I like the relationship that we've grown to have. So, and I respected that from Annika's point of view and from their point of view here. But it is fun, interesting, nice to see, especially that woman wearing a green jacket, arguably the greatest female golfer ever. But it is nice, and to watch them be tickled with it as she is. Her first trip here, she brought her husband, she brought the two children. They played, they stayed the night. She's been back twice for some other member functions, but that was her first trip here, and that's the way it should be.
And what a personality, as you say. She does so much for charity off the course, and she's so humble and very, very private, and would never talk about a membership here. And I think I said this on Austin's show the other day, you know, she's one of the 12 legends in my book, Life on the Green, Lessons in Wisdom from Legends of Golf, and she thanked me for including her as one of the 12 legends. That's just how Annika Sorenstam is.
Well, yes, that's her upbringing. That's how she was raised. That's how she's always been. She has not always been, or it took her a while, to be a little bit more open. When she was a competitor, she was driven. And she had sort of that Tiger Woods, you know, blinder mentality that, why was someone interested in me? Why did someone care about me? What do they want from me? And I'll tell you a story that as we became friends, or acquaintances and maybe then friends, we were at the PGA Merchandise Show. Boy, this was 10 years ago, and I had taken a friend of mine with me, and we had talked about Annika or whatever. And here came Annika and her husband down the aisle, and she's like, hugs me and kisses me. And I'm like, I don't know who that is, because that's not the person I met. It's the person she's become, but it's not the person I met because of how driven she was, and that's what she had to do to win 72 times and 10 majors.
Interesting. 40 Masters. What is a highlight? There's so many. I'm sure to pinpoint one or two, but you must have a couple in your mind that you'd like to talk about.
Oh, I can pinpoint one. It's easy for me. 1986. Second Masters I covered. I was a Jack Nicklaus sycophant growing up. I think I cared more about the putts he missed than he did. I never thought I'd see something like that. I never thought I'd be a part of something like that. At the time, we covered the tournament from what was a World War II Quonset hut. And television was sketchy, and they didn't cover much. And, you know, I've heard the stories. Vern Lundquist is on my show, and he talks about the stories of when Jack birdied 9, the producer, the director, kind of said, hey, Jack has birdied 9. And the producer says, we tell stories here at Augusta National, and right now Jack Nicklaus is not a story. And then he birdied 10, and he birdied 11, and the producer told him that, and the director told him that, and the producer acquiesced and said, okay, let's show Jack. And that was Frank Chekanian. Let's show Jack. And then he bogeys 13, and they kind of think it's over with. Now, I'm sorry, he bogeys 12, and they think it's over with. Now, I've left the Quonset hut, and I have to go watch this. So I watch the bogey go up on 12, and I'm like, oh. But I go out there, and I watch him birdie 13, and I watch him par 14. And I'm standing next to Barbara when Jack hits the second shot on 15 onto the green, and I now have to leave because I have to get back to the Quonset hut for my hourly update. But coming back to the Quonset hut, I hear the cheer for the eagle, and then I hear the cheer a little bit later as I'm entering the Quonset hut for the shot he hits on 16. And to this day, I have never heard a roar like the roar I heard when he hit it close on 16.
Great description there, John. You should do this for a living. But, you know, speaking of, you know, the coverage back then, how many years we couldn't watch the front nine. They didn't show the front nine. All those great shots we were missing because they just didn't show the first nine, I should say. That's how they say it here, not the front, the first nine.
Correct. And yet here they are leading the charge a couple of years ago with every shot in the tournament you can now see. And other governing bodies have kind of taken that up. But you're right. There was a time when the coverage was so limited, just 3 hours on CBS. It was, you know, we picked them up on 7 or 8 and watched them come in. Well, that's just, everything is different now, and the coverage is part of that.
And they were the first to have that app where you could go back and watch every single shot from every player in the field. So if you're on the air, you miss a shot, even, you know, somebody who's not even anywhere nearly in contention, you can see the action. And as you say, all the other majors kind of got with that. But the technology, the innovativeness with the technology, Austin has really set what is so such a traditional place. Are they always fighting with tradition versus innovativeness? You know, how do they maintain that balance?
Well, I mean, it's definitely a balance. It's funny in listening to John talk about Jack Nicklaus and what he did in 86. My first credentialed Masters would have been 88. And where was I in 87? I was here on the grounds as a patron, watching my childhood friend Larry Mize make the turn at 9, thinking that he had an outside shot at really making a run, not realizing at that point that Greg Norman and Seve Ballesteros were, you know, very likely going to, one of those two going to win the tournament. I make a decision to leave here and go to my cousin Dean's house, which is about 5 blocks south of where we are, to watch the end of the tournament, because Dean and Larry were best friends growing up, and all of Dean's family, who had always followed Larry Mize all over the National, had all done the same thing. We're going to go home and watch Sunday just in case something major happens. And when we all gathered, I think Larry was on 11 or 12 by the time I got there, we sat and watched magic happen. And you talking about something that is unsurpassed in my life, it's one thing to watch your favorite athlete do well. It's quite another to see somebody that you threw the baseball around with in the backyard win a green jacket. And that's what I got to see. That's my memory. That John's is with Nicklaus in 86. Mine is with Larry in 87. And I wasn't even here to see it. I was at home. And the guy that was in the yard next door to my Aunt Jewel doing yard work swears he heard the roar when Larry put the ball in the hole. And again, that's about a half a mile from here.
I bet.
I think Chairman Payne deserves a lot of credit for what has happened here in the last 15 years now. He has not been chairman for 5 or so years, because he came aboard and took the chairmanship after a period of time with a lot of course changes. Chairman Johnson changed a lot of the things on the golf course. And Billy seemed to not want to touch the golf course, but he touched everything else in this. And you know, for those who may not know, he was the organizer of the Olympics in Atlanta. So I credit him with a lot of the vision of getting us to where we are now, because he knew there was a no-win situation in changing the golf course, but there was a win-win situation in upgrading the technology and everything that goes along with this golf tournament.
And with Chairman Fred Ridley's leadership, it just seems like everything's gone so fast in a shorter period of time, including the Augusta National Women's AM. This is its 5th year, and I know he credits his 2 daughters for kind of pushing that concept along, Fred Ridley. And, you know, they've done a lot, not only with the women's AM here, which has become spectacular. We saw the finish today, but also with a lot of technology as well, since he kind of took the lead.
Well, yes, I think he has. And again, I don't mean to keep singing the praises of Billy Payne, but, you know, Chairman Ridley got to announce the Augusta National Women's Amateur his first year. I don't know that they do anything that quickly. I don't know if this wasn't in the works for a while before Chairman Ridley took over. They have many 10-year plans at this place, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's what they may be doing outside the grounds. So not to you know, put down what the chairman has done, but he has also you know, embraced technology and realized where it's going, and he's going to be in the forefront of whatever he can do. Now, in the chairman's defense, he has gotten something that I find fascinating to listen to, having been here for 40 years. You know, they've started talking about things in this community, whether it's Augusta University, whether it's Payne College, whether it's a golf course called The Patch. And I've heard chairmen say words that I never thought I'd hear a chairman of Augusta National talk about. He has really embraced this community, and they have become, through the years, a wonderful partner in this community.
Yeah, I can remember, though, when they announced the Augusta National Women's AM, that it clearly seemed like his idea and the fact that they were to implement it so fast. But interesting, you know, it does take time for changes like that. But they all have had some major impact, you know, good and bad.
Well, and let me say this. Chairman Ridley was a close confidant of Chairman Payne. He was the head of the competitions committee for many years. I think he was being groomed to become the next chairman. So I think he was integral in a lot of the things that have taken place before then.
You mentioned how when you saw Jack Nicklaus on 16, you heard, in back in 86, you heard roars unlike any other. What about Tiger when he chipped in on 16 in 2005 and went on to win? And when he had that comeback win here for his fifth Masters in 2019, were the roars similar, or you might have been in here and not out there?
Oh, that's very true. Yeah, we were in here when all of that happened.
In this media room.
Yes. You know, I just think it's one of the carefully crafted, wonderful, subtle traditions of this place, as you mentioned, Tiger. There is nothing, and it's, for me, even 40 years later, it's a goosebump moment. There is nothing like a player on the 18th hole having a putt to win the golf tournament. And unlike almost any other golf tournament where there are stands, these people are sitting in their chairs. And the moment that player hits the putt in unison, everybody stands up to see what happens. There's nothing in sport like that anywhere.
I agree. It's very exciting. Before I get into the women's AM, because that happened on the Saturday at the championship here with the young woman, Lonnie Wode, who was tied for Shoemaker for the lead at 7-under. She birdied the 18th, three of the last four holes, and she needed that birdie on 18 to win it and to kind of take it back. She was leading going into the final round, and she beats Bailey Shoemaker with that birdie on the 18th. It's even exciting, you know, before the Masters starts, right? Austin, what about your most memorable moment here?
Well, again, the Larry Mize moment was it. And having said that, that's the moment that I always cherish the most. I had, in my personal experience, witnessing something. There's so many. There's so many amazing moments. I think probably for me, the most moving personal moment was knowing that Arnold Palmer was going to be teeing off on 18 for the very last time. And we've got that coming with Jack, I'm sure, pretty soon. But Arnold Palmer has been close to my heart because he was always so nice to me personally. He and I made a connection over our shared fandom of the Steelers, and he never forgot that. He matter of fact, this lanyard I'm wearing right now says St. Vincent's College on it, and that's the college right across the street from Arnold Palmer Airport in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. And he never forgot that. Every time he would see me, Steeler guy, Augusta, yeah. And so we would always have that shared moment. And you know, little pieces of Americana, legendary sports figures are always larger than life. If you can somehow figure out a way to connect with them, the way that Jack Nicklaus and John are on first name basis. I mean, that's how cool is that? Did he ever think that when he was a teenager watching Jack Nicklaus? Are you kidding me? No. So it's these magic moments, we're very blessed. Covering this tournament the way that we have, we're very blessed in so many different ways.
And that honorary tea ceremony, just standing under the big oak tree by the clubhouse with those players, those three players coming out. And last year, I happened to be standing next to Jim Nance. And what an honor to stand next to the great Jim Nance, a legend himself, right? And out comes Barbara Nicklaus, who's caddying for Jack with the white, you know, jumper suit on. And then Tom Watson. And then Gary Player, 88 years young now. I mean, it's just the stories are incredible and the moments are so special. And you tend to savor those year in and year out. And it just seems like every year there's some kind of magical ending.
Oh, I think that's really important here. And I think they plan for that. The way the pins are set on Sunday to cause excitement, to have a race for birdies. And I think the people, you know, a lot of people come to this golf tournament on Sunday, and a lot of people at noon leave to go watch it on television. But the people that stay here want to be a part of history. They want to say, I was there when Tiger won that last time. You know, I was there when whatever happened. They desperately feel like they were a part of it, and they almost they almost desire for something historic to happen so they can say, I was there when that happened. And many times this tournament delivers.
What do you expect this week to happen? What are your picks? What are your predictions? There's so much, and anything can happen, obviously. We haven't seen much of Jon Rahm, the defending champion, since he jumped to LIV. We haven't seen much of Brooks Koepka, who's just a major machine, but, you know, he's always so capable of winning with two second-place finishes here at Augusta National. And Scottie Scheffler is playing lights out. I like Wyndham Clark. I mean, there's just so many great storylines, but I'll ask each of you. John, do you want to start? Who are you picking to win it all?
You mentioned him. I think it's really hard to pick against Scotty. He's playing so well. Now, the only thing that bothers me about his chances of winning, and maybe this is my naivete, you know, he's won three times in the last 5 or 6 weeks. Can you win four times in 7 weeks? I think it's hard to do. I'm sure he can pull this off, and the thing for me is when you hear how his competitors and his peers and his colleagues talk about his game, that's enough to make you stop in your tracks going, boy, if they think he's that good, he's that good. So it's really hard to get past Scotty. I think Brooks Koepka proved last year, as we were wondering how the LIV players would participate, not having played in meaningful golf tournaments. I think Brooks is a different animal. He loves his major championships. But I have no doubt that he and Jon Rahm and those who are still competitive, I'd like to see Dustin play well, those who are still competitive, I have no doubt that they will be in the mix. And that's another thing about this place and this golf tournament. Many times, especially on Championship Sunday, their names you know, their names you pull for, and many times it's a magical moment. Somebody's life is changed forever on that Sunday.
Who are you picking? Austin Rhodes.
I retired from that the year that I picked Jose Maria Olazabal to win, and he did. And as a matter of fact, I was in the – we used to have a huge pool here. Everybody that had a credential chipped in 10, 20 bucks, whatever it was. And I think I was like the seventh or eighth person to pick. So the prohibitive favorites had already been taken out of the mix at that point because everybody was allowed one name. And I picked Jose Maria. I took my $589 or whatever it was, and I said, I'll never make another prediction again.
So, one and done.
That's right. So, but I will tell you this, and I'm kind of like John is with Duke. John is a Duke fan. He the players come and go. He's a Duke fan. I'm an Augusta National fan, and I think I look forward to the Wednesday press conference as much as I do the competitive golf because I want to know what's coming next for this club. And that's when Fred Ridley and before him Hootie and before him Billy Payne, I mean all of them, they have a way of setting this town on its ear. And I'm the Augusta native. I'm the one that's been here from the very beginning. And I remember the days when I could walk from my house in National Hills and buy a practice round ticket for $10 and turn around and sell it on the way out or give it away. And those days are long gone. So where we are now versus where we were then and what's yet to come, I still think there are some major announcements that are going to come in the next 5 years. And so stay tuned.
Well, guys, it's always a pleasure to catch up with you. The insiders. Augusta, Georgia. You heard it right here, folks, on Sports Interview. Austin.
I can say this. More people have covered the tournament. More years have been covered than John and I have. However, I think John and I can probably claim the title for the most egg salad sandwiches eaten over the years that we've been here. What do you think, John?
You know, there was a time you could have 4 or 5 sandwiches a day. Those days are long gone for me. but no, there are times you'd get back up and oh, look, it's my 5th sandwich of the day.
He opts for the cheesecake now in the restaurant here.
That's pretty good. That was pretty good.
Thanks, guys. We are talking to Joe LaCava, who caddied for Tiger Woods when Tiger won the 2019 Masters. And then, Joe, I'm so glad you're on. It's just so great to hear your memory and your description of what's really going on with all of this. You know, Tiger takes the outright lead with a birdie on 15 and just never relinquished his lead after that. Molinari, he double bogeyed there.
Yeah, a little surprising that Francesco, you know, kind of, you know, it's easy now, but I mean, I guess you don't really anticipate hitting the ball that high from that short a distance, but you know, before Francesco hits his third shot into 15, Tiger hits a beautiful 5-iron from 227 yards, pin high, maybe 40 feet right of the hole. I tell people he basically made a 2 there. And so if you're Francesco, you think to yourself, okay, you know, he's going to 2-putt this thing and make birdie, and he's going to go take a 1-up lead on me. So you kind of – he's not forcing the issue, but in order to get it close to that pin when you lay it up to the left like Francesco did, you're going to have to hit it pretty high and pretty soft because you don't want to create too much spin where it's going to come off the green. So I think he's trying to hit something that comes in high and soft, maybe takes one hop and stops. And when you do that, obviously, you know, you hit it a little bit higher than you might normally do, and that's when he hit the tree, and it goes in the water. I wasn't anticipating that. I don't think anyone was, but obviously it was a break for us. And then Tiger converts a nice 2-putt for birdie to take a 1-shot lead. And again, now he's got some momentum. Now he's first on the next hole. And then we have a nice number on 16 for a full 8-iron for Tiger. He can go ahead and hit this thing. He probably can't hit it past the hole. He can rip an 8-iron, which was a nice, comfortable number for a big, solid 8-iron for Tiger.
And I remember reading where you said on 16, you thought that's probably as calm as you'd ever seen Tiger on a golf course. His ball landed, 3 feet from the cup? And he said, not that I've ever seen him antsy, but there was certainly a calmness and a confidence that he was going to get this thing done.
Yeah, I saw it in other tournaments working for him, obviously. I hadn't quite seen it in that big of a moment. And I'll go back to 15. Tiger hits a beautiful drive down the right center of the fairway. He's got 227. So as it turns out, it's a perfect 5-iron for him. But for whatever reasons, you know, we have a little bit of a weight there, which is absolutely no fun. But you got a 5-iron on your hand on a tight lie, knowing, you know, if you thin this thing a little bit, goes over the green, and that chip is zero fun. And obviously, if you hit a little bit heavy, it comes up in the water, and you can make whatever. So I felt myself getting a little antsy in the 15th fairway, and I'll never forget this look he gave me, because I'm kind of looking up at the clubhouse to see that big USA flag to see what's doing, because sometimes you can't always tell what the wind's doing down there. And it really wasn't blowing much. And I remember kind of circling around, getting antsy because Brooks was putting, and I'll never forget the look Tiger gave without saying a word. But I could read his mind almost just to say, don't worry, Joe, I got this thing covered. I've been here 100 times. So that kind of calmed me down a little bit, which was kind of cool.
And then he just stripes his tee shot on 17. You said it was the best shot of the tournament for Tiger.
You know, for me it was. I mean, it's not Tiger's favorite driving hole. you know, it's a fairly tight hole. It calls for, you know, more or less a straight shot, which isn't always the most fun shot. Obviously, you can draw it or cut it, but I mean, it kind of sets up for a straight ball. Tiger hit this 1-foot cut very, very solid. And, you know, I knew he hit it very well and very solid. He picked up that tee right away. And again, very confident, you know, been there, done this. But when we get up to the fairway and he's a yard past Tony Finau, that hadn't been the case all day. Obviously, there's some adrenaline there and just tells you how solid he hit it in a clutch moment like that. And then once he hit that shot, we had a nice, comfortable 9-iron there to hit it about 12, 15 feet. So he was firing on all cylinders for sure.
And Koepka missed a birdie attempt. And I think it was at that point that you knew all he needed, you know, was a bogey on 18 and he would still win, right?
Yeah, when we're playing 17, obviously Brooks, I think, hit it pretty close on 17. But when we're on 17T, you know, my thought as a caddy is, you know, if you do the math, Brooks is probably longer than Tiger. So I'm thinking to myself, he's probably going to have a wedge in the 17 or a wedge in 9-iron, wedge or 9-iron in 18. So I feel like he's going to give himself 2 good chances. And like you said earlier, I didn't realize this, but he won 3 of the previous 7 majors. So obviously he's a world-class player. So I'm anticipating at least 1 birdie, maybe 2. But he doesn't birdie 17, and then when Tiger pars 17, we got a nice lead there, and he doesn't. And then once Brooks pars 18, not like you said, now we know we just got to make a 5.
Wow! And what was it like for you? I mean, we saw Tiger's emotions, hugging his kids and his mom, but what about your emotions when he closed it out for his 5th green jacket?
Yeah, listen, it's an incredible feeling. You know, I go back to 92 when Fred did it. Again, maybe I took it for granted. And like I said, as you get older, you appreciate it more. You know, Tiger's a little bit older now. You know, so two things that I'll never forget, you know, on that green was, you know, when Tiger's done congratulating with the other players and caddies, he comes to me and hugs me. But as he's coming to me for a hug, he says, "We did it." Now, in today's world, a lot of caddies and players are very good friends. But I don't know how many guys are going to say we did it first thing out of their mouth. So for him to say that, and then on top of that, he completely means it. You know, for me, the time that I worked for him, I felt like it was more friend and buddy versus caddy. I wasn't his employee, and he never treated me like that. You know what I mean? First and foremost, I was a friend. So for him to say that on 18 Green was incredible, and even more incredible the fact that he 100% meant it. And then the moment got even better when he goes to the back of the green and hugs his kids and his mom, which to me is incredible. Came full circle from the time they won for the first time in 97 with his parents there. So, you know, as a parent of a couple of kids, I can appreciate that moment and how special it was for him and the kids.
That's just amazing. I mean, I could talk about this like for all week, but let's move on a little bit here. Tiger, he came in for a practice round about a week ago, played with Augusta National Chairman Fred Ridley, played with his buddy Justin Thomas. Do you think Tiger at this stage, knowing what has been going on all year, he hasn't really played competitively in an official tournament other than the Genesis Invitational, and he only played one round in six holes and then withdrew because of the flu. But can Tiger win another Masters title at this point, do you think, Joe?
You know, I never say never. I wouldn't put it past the guy. You know, I talked to him a little bit. We talked, you know, a decent amount via text these days, but I talked to him a little bit in person at LA. And I think, you know, the most important thing for him is he's in a lot less pain on a day-to-day basis, which I think will allow him to practice some more. Even though, like you just said, he hasn't played anything but basically the Genesis, I think down the road he can practice more. He can maybe play a little bit more, and I'm sure he's been practicing at home pretty hard. It's his favorite tournament of all time, so I wouldn't put anything past him. I mean, is it going to be tough, you know, with all these world-class players, Scottie Scheffler, so on and so forth, playing, you know, pretty much every week, playing well and practicing? Of course they have the upper hand, not to mention the age. But, you know, you never count Tiger out of anything, that's for sure.
Well, let's talk about the guy you're caddying for this week, Patrick Cantlay. His best finish this year is tied for fourth at the Genesis. In 2019, his best finish was tied for ninth at the Masters. What does Patrick need to do to win this week?
Well, I think, you know, like everybody, I mean, he's going to have a short game, you know, he's going to have an A-plus short game. You know, there's so much feel around these greens, and I think Pat's in the point of his career where he's played Augusta National enough that he knows, you know, how to get balls up and down on the greens, how to two-putt from, you know, from crazy putts on those greens. I think he certainly drives it well enough. As you know, he's one of the best drivers on the tour. He's certainly long enough, and he's certainly straight enough, and obviously he's got a nice iron game. So I think it's going to come down to a short game for Pat. And the good news for me is he's one of the greatest pitchers and chippers of the ball that I've ever seen. So, you know, I like his chances as much as anyone. I know he's been home working hard for 3 weeks. And, you know, we've talked about the fact that, you know, for me anyways, I think, you know, obviously you need all parts of your game to be clicking at Augusta National. But I think it's important that you have great touch and feel around the greens, and he does have that.
Now, would you have wanted him to play in the last week or two to come in with, you know, more competitive play leading into this week?
Yeah, I mean, you can look at it both ways. I mean, he's going to come off 3 weeks off, but at the same time, you know, we had a pretty busy West Coast schedule, played 5 of the 7 events, and then he played the 2 weeks in Florida. So I think it's up to each individual. You know, you got to kind of know your body and your mind. I mean, I think he was ready for, you know, a physical and mental break, which I'm fine with. And, you know, he tossed around the idea of playing this week, and I told him, he says, what do you think? I said, listen, I'm not with you right now. You got to do what's best for, you know, like I just talked about, best for you both mentally and physically. If you feel like you need a little more time to rest and get ready at home, then I'm all for that. You know, it's kind of one of those things where you have to make your own call. You know, like Phil back in the day always wanted to play the week before because he felt like he was in, you know, game mode and competitive and stuff like that. A guy like Tiger never played the week before. So you can't argue with either guy. They both had a lot of success in majors. So it's just kind of up to the individual.
So what's it like caddying for him, say, compared to Tiger or Freddie?
You know, it's similar in terms of the way they play the game. They, you know, they all have some power. You know, their MO is to kind of eat up the par fives. And, you know, they're going to do well, obviously, when they putt well. You could say that about everybody. You know, I mean, Pat's pretty stoic, but I think he's pretty emotional inside. And he cares a lot. He may not just show it. Obviously, Tiger's going to show it to you and wear it on his sleeve. And Fred's kind of somewhere in between. But in terms of working for them on the golf course, you know, they're great to me. They're pretty easy to work for. With Pat, I'm reading a few more putts, which I'm so jacked up about because I love to read putts. So I think I'm in the game a little bit more on the green, which I absolutely love. And I think the sky's the limit for Pat, and the best stuff for him is ahead.
Is reading the greens the way you do, is that a talent that you're born with, Joe, or does it develop with more and more experience?
That's actually a pretty good question. I feel like you're born with it for the most part. Can you get better at it if you caddy a lot or just read your own green and stuff like that? Maybe so. Most of the guys I play with, all my buddies, they read them okay. They're not bad at it. But I tell people, you guys are out here kind of blowing off steam and getting away from work. So you're not here to grind. See, like, my job's to grind. So I enjoy grinding and reading greens and stuff like that. I think, I grew up playing golf a little bit and played a little bit of high school golf, but I don't feel like I've gotten better over the years caddying. I just think I've always been a halfway decent green reader, and it's just something you kind of have or you don't have.
Well, I am blessed to have a front row seat to watch and talk about extraordinary performances in sport. But you, my friend, have more than a front row seat. You're right there in the action and have been such a huge part of all the history. It's just incredible. Do you ever pinch yourself? A kid from Connecticut who has been so close and so much a part of this incredible history.
Yeah, and that's also another good point. Sometimes I do. I look back and say, wow, I can't believe I worked for Tiger for whatever it was, 10, 11, 12 years, or over 100 tournaments, and was fortunate enough to be there when he won the Masters and won TPC. And same thing with Freddie, won the Masters, and it was Player of the Year a couple times. And, it's like I said, I've been fortunate in a couple respects. The fact that I've worked for nothing but, Hall of Famers, great players. And then on top of that, which is probably even the better part of it, is, I've worked for great guys that I've gotten along with and I've done a lot of fun stuff with. So I guess as I get older, maybe when I'm done, I'll appreciate it more. But I think I do appreciate it along the way. And again, I've been very fortunate to work for these guys.
Well, you have to write a book. I know you can't, but you have to. Because the stories you must have and all the memories that you really do. I mean, there's so much to remember, and you do remember it pretty well, right? You're not forgetting any major points or stories. You probably just can't tell them.
Well, I can share some with, buddies over a couple beers, that kind of thing. And there's, like you said, there's plenty of good, funny stories. And I've had so many laughs with all the guys. And it's fun because, for me, it doesn't always happen this way. But, when I went to work for Tiger, Fred and I have remained the best of friends. And, I went to work for Pat recently. Tiger and I have become probably even closer, and we talk about the kids more and stuff like that. So it's nice that all the relationships are still there. They ended well, and everything was great in between. So, again, very, very fortunate here. But, yeah, incredible. I mean, to share some of these stories and what I've seen and done has been crazy good.
Well, I can't thank you enough for sharing some of these stories and memories with us. Continued success, Joe LaCava. My thanks to Austin Rhodes and John Patrick, and to Hall of Fame caddy Joe LaCava. As Byron Nelson once said, two-time Masters champion, the prestige one gets from winning the Masters tournament is very great, and I will not be satisfied until I win it again. As for the beauty, the course stands far superior to anything I have ever played. That's Byron Nelson talking about Augusta National. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy the Masters. Be kind, be safe, and I'll talk to you next Saturday morning right here on Sports Interview with Ann LaGorrie.